Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go. Cause when I look to the sky, something tells me you're here with me. And you make everything all.
And welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Community Family Growth Services. They were founded in 1980 to provide services to local Long Island families in need of assistance with issues related to living within a family system. They can be found at www.cfgs.homestead.com. Tonight's guest is Bill Caspary. And if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. And how are you this fine evening, Bob?
Pretty good. Trying to stay cool in this heat wave we're having.
I'm staying cool. I'm staying in the air.
You never leave the house.
Too much work.
I see you got pictures of clouds on your desk.
Yeah, I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from here and there, and still somehow. This is a wonderful article in Health and Science part of the newspaper that people ask why, when people look at the clouds, they see shapes. And that's very, very common. Of course, their explanation is the usual, which I think we always talk about, is that our brains seem to be hardwired to make familiar shapes out of things that we see. And, of course, when we talk about EVP and the likes, we always talk about creating familiar sounds from what we hear. So I kind of thought this was an interesting thing because it was, again, a little more scientism that maybe, just maybe, the cloud is being shaped for your benefit.
Yeah, well, I remember as lying on my back at the beach and on the grass and looking at the clouds and seeing different shapes and I would, you know, you could swear that what you're seeing is real, and then you say to the person next to you, "Do you see that?" And they say, "What are you, crazy? I don't see that." You know, it was very rare that, you know, you have several people seeing the same thing. So I don't really subscribe to the theory that, you know, that it's arranged that way at certain times for our benefit. But it's the same thing, like you mentioned with ITC, you know, and EVP. It doesn't mean because we're hardwired to make sense out of a visual image that all visual images are the product of our imagination. There is some, you know, it's the same thing with sound. We've seen plenty of examples of evidence with EVP that it's clearly not disjointed sounds that we're putting together because of the way our brain works. You know, when you play it for 10 different people and 10 different people hear the same thing, it tends to discount that theory. But, well, I'm always interested and cognizant of that fact, and, you know, I can remember sitting at conferences and, you know, where they have all those different patterns in the walls and or on the carpet, and just looking down because I'm bored out of my skull and staring at the carpet and swear I see different shapes and different images, and I wonder if other people see the same thing. It's happened to you, I'm sure.
It is, but let's take it a step further. I mean, we hear countless number of reports of people watching a crowd and suddenly seeing amongst those people in the crowd, or even if it's just a single person walking around, that it looked like their deceased loved one, or it looked like someone who had passed. Just for a moment, just for a fleeting moment, it looked exactly like that person. And deep down inside, they got this immediate knowing that it was that person, and then it was gone. Now, if you consider transmediumship, where the mediums actually, their facial figure changes into a totally different person, and I don't think you've witnessed it, but I've witnessed it, where the medium has allowed spirit to take control of their body, and a beautiful, slim medium turns into this big, heavy man with a beard. It happened. I watched it happen. So why then couldn't spirit change a cloud or spirit change a person walking across the street?
Well, listen, I'm open to the fact, and that happens to me occasionally too, where I'll see, somebody and I'll do a double take and look, and all of a sudden the thoughts will be, to my loved one in spirit. But it's also, maybe it's not a case of materialization or transfiguration, just like other signs. Perhaps somebody in spirit manipulated us to be there at that spot because there was going to be somebody walking by that looked very much like they looked in the physical, and that was a hello, because you may have been thinking of that person. So
my point, and let's take it yet another step.
Doesn't mean that person's actually materializing, but manipulating the environment so that you for
well,
the purpose.
Well, if we create our own reality, your loved one in spirit knows what you recall they looked like when they were here in the physical, and imparts that vision onto that person. That's a hello. The same way people say, and I know you don't like this sign, but when people say, I found a penny, I found a dime, I found a quarter, whatever coin it is, we can also associate that with transmediumship, where they make things appear in the room.
Well, more physical mediumship.
Physical mediumship,
yeah.
Right.
The apports and the such, yeah, and there's absolutely no explanation for that.
I know that somebody who has not delved into this before that would find a penny or find a coin or see a butterfly would find comfort in that, and then a couple of years down the line would say, I was in such grief. But we do have evidence through physical mediumship that things can be created here into the physical world.
Well, we do have a lot of evidence, and that's an area of study that's continuing. It's been going on for quite some time, and a lot of just now scientists are starting to get back into researching, the phenomena of physical mediumship. As a matter of fact, Dr. Browdy, who's going to be presenting at our San Diego conference, will be reporting on his investigation of physical mediumship. So I'm anxious to hear, what he's learned
in
circumstances that were under his control. So he was able to conduct some scientific research.
Right, and he's always been a very exciting guest to have on the radio, and he's going to be even more exciting to be able to spend some time with and to listen to his presentation on evidence of an afterlife at the conference in November.
Yeah, and you and I have never experienced physical mediumship, and we're going to do just that in August, and we'll certainly report back, and we're going to sit with one of the physical mediums that's going to come to the United States, the same physical medium, Kai Mugi, that Dr. Browdy investigated. So it's one of those things, for me anyways, that I really need to witness this for myself.
I think everyone should witness it for themselves.
Right, to be able to form some sort of opinion. One thing I've learned is be open, and I certainly am, but it disturbs me that a lot of scientists and even people that are in the metaphysical field are very skeptical of it. So I think everybody should be open to it, just as we're open to regular mediumship.
Agreed.
The what were you telling me about?
This is just a wonderful little tidbit, and we seem to have missed tuning in, but apparently they'll be rerunning it on the PBS channels. It started Monday with the first airing of this. It's called Homegoing, A Different Kind of Funeral. And it's basically a film that captures this gentleman, Mr. Owings, who's the 62-year-old funeral director, and for African American funerals, and they call it a sad good time because they don't say goodbye necessarily. It's really a celebration of their loved ones returning to home rather than leaving them.
Well, that's an interesting. So it's not just celebrating their life; it's celebrating their return.
Their return,
right?
Yeah. That it's you know, and over the years, I think we've moved so far away from the concept of where we've come from, and that we're only here visiting in a physical shell. And when we're done with that, it's time to go back, almost like a ride at an amusement park.
Right.
You know, when it's over, it's over.
Right. All right, we're going to go to a break. Well, we have a very interesting guest for you tonight, Bill Kasbari, who wrote a wonderful book called The Galilean Pendulum. So we're going to take a break for a couple of minutes and come right back and introduce Bill. So stay with us.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida, fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Bill Kasbari. Our sponsor is Community Family Growth Services, founded in 1980 to provide services to Long Island families in need of assistance with issues related to living within a family system. They can be found at www.cfgs.homestead.com. Back to you, Bob.
And Bill Kasbari, he's a retired engineer and a business person. He was immersed in materialist scientific thinking, as most of us are, and I should say many of us. He rarely gave thought to life after death. After the death of Bill's second son, John, he dedicated his life to pursuing scientific study in an attempt to find out if it's really possible that we survive physical death. He wrote a terrific book called The Galilean Pendulum, A New Science Reveals an Unseen World, and in it he chronicles the pathway to understanding through rigorous science. Website that Bill has set up is understandingafterlife.com. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And we're very happy to have you with us. You know, Bill, in reading your book, you described, as I mentioned, going about your life, had a scientific worldview, as a lot of people do. And your world changed, obviously, after the death of your second son. What struck me and what resonated with me was that your sudden need, you know, to find meaning and purpose in your life. And do you think that this search is common among people who lose loved ones, this desire to find some purpose and meaning?
I do think so. I'm starting to get inquiries, many more inquiries, now that the word is getting out about my book. And, I'm finally getting some action on the website. I think today I had three different people contact me telling me that they'd lost their son. Some people are skeptic. Some people were skeptic but then had some signs that they interpreted as, you know what, I know my son is around. And I think what was interesting with me, Bob, when I thought back about it, was that when I lost Ricky, you know, it hurt. But I think it was partly that, you know, he was an infant and he was struggling. You know, he was a sick baby, and it was, in a way, it was a relief that he was able to move on. But I just didn't think about where did he move on to. You know, it just kind of didn't enter my mind. A couple of years later, John was born. He was a happy, healthy baby, a very friendly kind of a person, and I got really close to him. And when I lost him, you know, it was like I thought I'd paid my dues, but apparently there is no such thing. And I was just devastated. And so that's when I decided I had to begin a search. And the only way I could understand was through some sort of scientific method.
Mm. And that search, would you describe that search as simply trying to find out if John and Ricky still survived? I mean, is that the underlying it? I mean, more than anything else, I would imagine that's a bereaved parent wants to know if their child still survives and if the child's okay. Was that the motivator?
Yes, that was it. The night he died, I laid in bed trying to understand where could he possibly have gone. Did he, you know, does he still exist? And I just made a vow to myself. I said, you're going to spend the rest of your life trying to find an answer whether I'm going to see my sons again or not. You know, and it applies to other loved ones too. But it was so, I was so devastated when I lost my son the second time that's when it really, the switch flipped in my mind and I said, this is it. Yeah, I have to do other things too, but I'm going to spend as much time as I can searching for an answer. I never thought I would find that answer, but eventually I did.
Yeah, and the book, as I mentioned, the Galilean Pendulum, I mean, based upon Galileo. So tell us a little bit about, how'd you come up with that title? Why did...
Well, what I noticed right after, at the memorial service for John, I noticed an awful lot of people were very, very uncomfortable, just like sort of about the subject of death. You know, if I brought it up, people would become uncomfortable. And in a way, I can understand that. But at the same time, I thought, well, why is it that we're afraid to talk about death? And I got to thinking about how our culture, you know, originally was a very religious culture, you know, Western culture, say, and how it had gradually shifted to becoming one that was dominated by scientific thinking. You know, everything is DNA and genetics, and when your DNA dies, you die. You know, it's that kind of thinking.
Right.
And so I got thinking about how we had transitioned from, in Galileo's day, you know, we had a culture that was dominated by religion and scientists like Galileo were persecuted for, you know, saying that, you know, everything isn't as it is described in the scriptures, or at least your interpretations of the scriptures are not accurate. And so I just thought it was kind of a funny switch. So I thought it's, in my way of thinking of that, is a pendulum swung from the side where religion dominated to where science is dominating. And I thought it was time for us to get back to a little bit of spirituality, not so much religion, but spirituality.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that. And what you're doing, I mean, just like Galileo tried to educate the supposedly, you know, higher minds of his time, you know, there are some scientists today that are trying to do the same thing, although a great a number of scientists in the community today continue to ignore the evidence. And I guess that because the evidence goes against their education and their training. I mean, do you agree with that? Is that the reason you think scientists, you know, continue to be involved in this scientism and fight the evidence that you've uncovered?
I think it has to do. I think it's ingrained in us as children. Now, many people ingrain, you know, the belief in one particular religion or another in their children, but many of us, I think, I for one, even though I had 12 years of religious schooling, it just didn't register with me. I have this kind of a mind that just can't believe. You know, you tell me that this is the way it is, I can't comprehend it. I remember I was in the eighth grade, and one of the little girls in the class, and this school was, the class was taught by nuns, and one of the little girls in the class said, "Well, where is God?" And the teacher's answer was, "He's all around us." Well, I didn't know how to I couldn't interpret that. It didn't make any sense to me. I don't see him. I can't feel him. I don't hear him. So what does that mean? It's just, I think that there are some people who are, it's much easier for them to accept things on faith than others.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. There are many, many people that blind faith is good enough for them.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I think that in many respects, you know, your situation is very much like myself, in that I also needed to go the scientific exploration route. I didn't have this inner knowing or this innate knowledge. Fran, on the other hand, did, and it's very similar to your wife, Diane, in that she did. So I was curious about the interaction between the two as you grieved, and you obviously, you know, grieved differently. Were the experiences that Diane was having, personal experiences, was that helpful to you, even though you may not have been having them, her, you know, having him was that comforting, or were you jealous?
in a way, it was comforting, but I think it was more because it was not just my wife; it was also my daughters. They seemed to have to believe that these things that were happening to them, and I think mostly in dreams, they believed that those were real. And I was happy for them, but I was like, okay, John, if you really can come to people in dreams, why aren't you coming to me? And I talked to Diane about that one day, and she said, "Bill, it's probably because you're not really open to it. You have to have an open mind to allow these things to come through to you." And it took me years, Bob, to finally get the message. And it was not until I got involved in the study of mediums where I had it shown to me in a scientific way that, okay, there is no other explanation than that we do survive. That was my interpretation of it.
Right, and as you mentioned, I mean, that was your introduction to the science behind this. And I know that you did work, and you helped to fund some research at the University of Arizona, and mediums were actually researched under controlled conditions using scientific, you know, principles. And as you were going through the mediumship research, I mean, did you did you sometimes question what you were seeing? Did you question your own objectivity by saying, well, maybe it's, I'm just trying to make this fit? Or were you, you know, impressed by the data which was it? Was that what made you turn the corner with the overwhelming amount of evidence that you uncovered by doing the mediumship research?
Yeah, that was it. Because I didn't get involved in that for the first 10 years. And in the book, I talk about, you know, some glimpses of paranormal phenomena that I had. Things that I couldn't understand, I just couldn't comprehend how these people knew what they knew. And yet I was just questioning it because I either had to believe them or I didn't have to believe it. When I became involved with the mediumship research, now we were doing tests, they were controlled, any kind of fraud was completely ruled out. That couldn't have been the case. And I was still being shown these, what should I call them, paranormal events. You know, I was being shown things that I could not comprehend any way that these mediums could be getting this information other than through some sort of contact with my son, you know, and in one case with my father, my father-in-law, and so forth. The evidence was just overwhelming, and I had to get hit in the head with that a number of times before it finally began to sink in. Bill, there really is something to this. Open your mind and let it come in.
Yeah, and you spent a lot of time, you know, with the mediumship research, and you made a very interesting analogy. You know, people are always asking us, and we're always trying to try to describe in our physical terms the process by which, you know, the discarnate entities, you know, communicate with those of us in the physical. And you described it in your book. You likened the process to a game of charades, which I thought was very insightful. So tell me a little bit about your thought on that. I mean, how is it like a game of charades?
Well, when I that actually occurred to me, the very first reading that I received, what happened was these readings were emailed to me the day after I met Dr. Schwartz, who was the guy studying the mediums.
Right.
And he came. He was at my house that evening, and I'd never met him before. I'd met him that day, and he just said to me, "Bill, I'm going to go ahead and email a few people. I'm just going to give them the name of your son, John, and I'm going to see what they get." Okay, great. You know, I didn't know what he was doing or didn't understand it at all. And then he went home back to the university, and the next morning a couple of emails showed up. And the first one, as I read it, it was like, I don't get this. What is this stuff? You know, something about, does this man speak foreign languages? Well, no, my son didn't speak foreign languages. He was very spiritual. Well, that didn't really fit my son. And now I'm getting flowers that remind me of Hawaii. There were these sorts of things in there. And the more I read this, everything fit my dad. And I thought, oh, my goodness, this is not my son. This is my dad. And, in fact, Janet, who was the medium, said that this man, he's there in front of everybody. There are other people behind him, but he's the one, he wants to talk. Well, that was my dad. You know, he was always ahead of the line. And so that was the first time, I think, that I began to get an idea that how this works. And the fact that it was also my dad and the personalities that came through, all of a sudden, now I was I'm wide open. My ears are open now. Just show me what you've got. And then I read the next one, which was the first reading that I put in there, and it was my son John. And then there was something, is there a tribute to your son John? You know, because I'm hearing these songs and so forth. Well, it turned out that my son was in a jazz band in high school and these sorts of things. And then suddenly she switches to, now I'm being shown a starry night, stars on a starry night as a girl, and she's with him. And right away I knew who that was. It was a young lady that was killed, you know, that had been my daughter's best friend. Well, once I began to get these and more just evidence of this sort, now I got to the point where I said, okay, now I believe this stuff. I'm convinced. but now I want to understand it better. So I you know, at that point, I began to, you know, I talked to Dr. Schwartz about, can we ask questions, you know, and we began what we call the Asking Questions program there.
Right. Well, when you know, a lot of people have a misconception, you know, they think that the medium is like a, you know, a direct telephone line to those in spirit. So, I mean, I liked your analogy of being more like a game of charades, you know, where you know, they're getting image, they're able to communicate, you know, images and sounds and smells and things of that nature, you know, rather than you know, a direct conversation. So I guess that's also what you meant by going, you know, with, as charades. It's more of an interpretation, right?
Yes, that's I didn't quite get to that point. It just struck me that it must be difficult for them to come up with things that they can show to a medium who receives images and sounds and maybe some sort of a feeling in their chest or their stomach or something. How do you get a medium to not only receive these, but then be able to interpret them in a way that would be meaningful to the person receive, you know, the sitter who's getting the readings? And so I thought of that. It struck me as it is like charades. You know, you have people that are sitting there and they're not allowed to talk, but they're allowed to, you know, use signs and symbols and make faces or something like that. So it just struck me as a good way to look at it.
Yeah, and I think it is a good way. Do you find, you know, you had witnessed and participated in, you know, many different readings for many different people. Do you find that often that, you know, the readings would begin with a flurry of significant information and then, you know, gradually kind of tail off? I mean, was that, or do you find more of a consistency throughout the reading?
I think that in general, there seemed to be a whole bunch of information that was very, very meaningful, you know, and specific. And then after a while, it was like, okay, now they're running out of ideas, things to come up with. That happened in my readings with John, when my dad came through, when Diane's dad came through. There were some things that were very clearly indicative of those people. And then after a while, you know, you started getting things that weren't as obvious. So to answer your question, yes, I think that's the case. It's almost like, again, they run out of ideas how to play this game, how to you know, I guess it would almost be like playing charades, you know. Geez, I've shown these guys everything I can think of, and they're still not getting it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine it can't be easy. You know, you're this entity of thought and energy, and you without a body, and you may even be getting used to your new environment, and it has to be a difficult process. And maybe that's why you know, not everybody is able to do that, and not everybody is able to receive it. You know, do you think of it as a resonance? You know, with a discarnate has to somehow resonate, you know, maybe through vibration or frequency with both the medium and the sitter.
And I don't know the mechanism per se, but I do believe that there is some sort of something like a resonance, or, you know, hitting the right frequency that these people we call mediums seem to. Seem to have the ability to resonate with the discarnate. And it seems to me like in my particular case, my son John seemed to resonate with Janet Mayer, because she came through with so many things that were so right on. And again, I don't quite know how to phrase it, but there was some sort of a connection, whether it be a resonance or whatever, between them, that was, you know, just seemed to be the best one.
Yeah, that does seem to happen consistently. We are talking with Bill Caspary. The book is called The Galilean Pendulum, A New Science Reveals an Unseen World. The website is understandingafterlife.com. We're going to go to a short break. We're going to come back with much more with Bill, so stay with us.
Paul Alexander, singer, songwriter, and licensed psychotherapist, created GriefSong.com after working in hospice providing care to bereaved families. The music of GriefSong.com offers music to support, nurture, and acknowledge the landscape of grief. Many have used Paul Alexander's music for inspiration, memorial services, and comfort. Visit GriefSong.com to hear some of the music available. The sounds of hope and healing.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Bill Kasparri. The show is sponsored by Community Family Growth Services, founded in 1980 to provide services to local families in need of assistance with issues relating to living within a family system. They can be found at www.cfgs.homestead.com. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. There are three ways to show us you like Signs of Life Radio. Go to the Signs of Life Radio page on Facebook and like us, or use the donate button on any one of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space to add a comment on what you love and what you might not like so much about the show. And then remember us when you shop. When you shop, you can support the work of our 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization without spending any additional money at all. First, you'll need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or are in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com. But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website. And again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in their more than 1,300 online stores, like Bloomingdale's, Drugstore.com, The Body Shop, Zales, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Grief Transformation Weekend, July 26th to 28th at the Guest House in Chester, Connecticut, is taking reservations right now for the first 50 people who will fill this intimate retreat escape with like-minded people seeking to maintain their relationships with those who have crossed to the other side. Like no other retreat before, do not miss this exciting weekend with Garrett Jackson, Paul Alexander, Dr. Betty Kovach, Doreen Malloy, Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, Laura Lynn Jackson, and our Healing Reiki team of volunteers, Donna Mello and Robin Murray. And keep in mind that as a retreat, you can save a lot of money by asking us to match you up with a roommate or two instead of assuming the entire cost of a single room. Our 7th annual Afterlife Conference will be held this year in beautiful and warm San Diego, California, at the DoubleTree by Hilton Golf Resort, November 9th and 10th. Mark the dates, as this will be the best one ever. The big member-only discount ends on July 31st, so make your plans now for the Friday night banquet featuring Kim Russo, star of the hit TV series The Haunting of. She'll be the keynote presenter, bringing through communication from the other side. Then the conference begins early Saturday morning through Sunday evening, including featured presentations by Tom and Lisa Butler, Dr. Jeffrey Tarrant, research medium Janet Mayer, Dr. Stephen Browdy, Dr. Evan Alexander, and Lloyd Auerbach, with spirit communication demonstrations from certified mediums Laura Lynn Jackson and Angelina Diana. And as a special add-on this year, we bring you Medium Monday, so check the website for registration information now. Our Holidays Past raffle is in full swing, and you might want to get in while the number assignments are low, since the computer program pulls the winners by assigned numbers. The mediums in this raffle are Dave Campbell, Eliza Ray, Nancy Marlowe, Tracy Lee Nash, and Catherine Nadell. It's $5 a chance, and those are my announcements for this evening. Back to you, Bob.
And we are back with Bill Caspary. The book is The Galilean Pendulum, A New Science Reveals an Unseen World. The website is understandingafterlife.com. Bill, what I wanted to ask you, there are some people, after they lose a close loved one, they never believed in survival, never believed in an afterlife, and they continue in that belief. Then there are others, such as yourself, that find a compelling need to find out more. And then they discover, you know, some evidence along the way. Do you think that the two groups grieve differently?
I guess apparently they do. I think in the former case, it could be a sort of denial. Because I've talked to people who just, you know, like the guy I give an example in the book, oh, if my son was killed, I would just get rid of any reminders. To me, that's kind of wishful thinking, you know what I mean? I'll just forget about it. Well, I think that some people are able to bury it. I can even use myself as an example. When I lost Ricky, I think my attitude was, you know, sort of complacent. Life's tough, and you got to just go on. Without thinking so much about, well, you know, what's the meaning of life? And that's why when, like I said earlier, when I lost John, all that changed. So.
Mm. Now, you've done extensive research in mediumship. I mean, and you've, as you spell out in the book, you've investigated a lot of other evidence. I mean, you've looked at near-death experiences. You've looked at, you know, reincarnation and electronic voice phenomena and all these various, you know, modes of study. Are you now convinced?
Solidly. I have, actually, you know, a friend who was reading my book, you know, and I have to tell you that a lot of people are surprised that I would write a book like this because, you know, oh, geez, you know, your son died over 20 years ago. You're still worried, you know, he's still involved in that. And he asked me, he said, Bill, how sure are you of all this? And I told him, I said, you know, based on what I've learned, I've never been more sure of anything in my life. This to me is like is almost irrefutable, or however you say that.
Mm. Yeah, and you know, I always, you know, liken it to, you know, a process where you, most people start out with some hope, and then that hope gradually turns into belief, and then, you know, if they're lucky, you know, it turns into a knowing, and it obviously turned into a knowing. I suspect that in somebody like Diane, your wife, it's different. You don't go through that process. There's an inner knowing. I mean, do you find that some people are just more spiritual than others, and they just have this, you know, it comes a lot easier for them?
I think definitely, yes. You know, I think like your wife and my wife are perfect examples of that. The morning after John died, some friends who had lost their daughter, and there was a dormitory fire over at UC Berkeley, and this was about 8 months before I lost John. And they were at our house the next morning, and they were good friends, and we knew their daughter and everything. And I told her, I said, you know, I'm going to go ahead and I've got to come up with some proof. And she just looked at me and she said, well, good luck. She says, I don't need any proof. I already know.
Right.
Well, and I just looked at her. I'm like, well, I don't know how you know, but I have to have some sort of proof. So there are people who are, in my way of looking at it, very fortunate that they have that knowing, you know. And I think, for example, in Diane's case, she had some feelings in her that she just didn't have any doubt what they were, you know.
Absolutely. When you think back, you know, before you embarked on this, you know, the discovery process, what were your feelings about mediums, you know, before you looked into it? I mean, if I would have said to you, you know, 15, 20 years ago that I went to a medium, what would you think?
Well, my first question would have been, what's a medium?
Right.
Okay. And secondly, what do they do? And as soon as you told me, I would have assumed that they were the same as a fortune teller or something, you know. And so, and even Diane, I think, as far as that goes, didn't know, you know, exactly understand what a medium was. She just kind of had her own knowing, but she didn't realize that there were people who were able to communicate with the deceased. So,
do you think that you mentioned earlier about, you know, these dream, you know, visitations. I know, you know, you, Diane and your daughters have had some. Do you think that's the most common form of communication, you know, between the discarnates and people in the physical?
I think it's, what should I say, the least subtle. I think there are other things that happen that we don't recognize as being associated with the discarnate. But I just put on my website a few days ago, I had a dream where John came to me in the dream, and when I'm first in these dreams, you know, I'm just in a dream. I don't even know I'm in a dream, of course. And then all of a sudden when I see John, after a few seconds, I go, oh, wait a minute, there's John, and I know John died. So, okay, hang on to this one. You're with John right now. And I just put one on my blog the other day where he, I think, was trying to show me, Dad, it is me. I can't hold this very long. It's that, to me, is the most helpful. When I wake from one of those dreams, I feel so good, and I feel so sure that I was with my son. Whereas some more subtle things, you know, some what we might call a coincidence happens, I'm less inclined to think of them as, you know, some sort of a paranormal phenomenon.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And let's face it, I mean, if you're, you know, in the world of spirit and you're trying to get through, I mean, we're, especially if you have a tendency to this left brain kind of thinking. I mean, that must be the prime opportunity when you're in that REM state or you're unconscious, so to speak, you know, to get through. I perfectly understand. A lot of people say exactly the same thing, that they wake up from this dream. Now, what you were just describing, you're this lucid kind of a dream where you know that you're in the dream, and you know that John's in spirit, and you know that you're talking to him, and you sort of sounds like you're sort of trying to take control of it, right?
I'm trying. What I've learned is my fear is that I'm going to do something to make it stop, to make it go away. And so I'm afraid to do anything. And so I just sit there and say, okay, just relax and just observe and just try to keep it going as long as possible. Because for whatever reason, just as, you know, maybe they have trouble coming up with ideas for the game of charades, I think they probably have that same difficulty in maintaining that presence during a dream. I think it must be a difficult thing to do, to maintain that vision for you.
Yeah, you know, that's the value of having, you know, discussions like this, because, you know, we're always talking about this am I crazy question, and I'm sure that there's many, many people listening to you tonight that have had similar, you know, types of dreams where they've also been afraid to do anything, you know, because they're going to lose the connection, so to speak, you know, and this is something that it happens to a great many of us, and there's no reason to not talk about it. The more you talk about it, the more that people will learn, and the more you'll be able to change worldview about these things. So you said a lot of things tonight that I'm sure a lot of people are, you know, so-called resonating with, because it's not exclusive to you or me or anybody else. It just is what it is. So, you know, I appreciate, you know, your input on that. Bill, what do you think, what are some of the misconceptions that people have about mediumship?
Well, probably the biggest one is that that it's a bunch of frauds, that somehow, you know, there's this thing called cold readings where you're sitting in front of the medium and that medium is watching you, and she's going to throw out the first letter of a name and then watch your reaction. You know, it's as if, oh, they can't do this unless they're a bunch of frauds and they're like magicians, you know, they're tricking you somehow. I think that's the biggest misconception of, you know, sure, there are frauds. There are frauds in every walk of life, and there are fraudulent mediums. But I think that was what made the fact that we were doing controlled studies in a very strict and university environment, that I received readings over the internet from someone who had no idea who this information was for, you know, that sort of thing. I think that is what's needed. People need to open their minds up to take an objective look at that and say, well, you know, there's no fraud. All these misconceptions about mediums, such as fraud and that they're, you know, they're nothing more than some fortune tellers. They're making some pretty good guesses here and there. I think if they look at some of the evidence that many, many people have out there, they'll find that, you know, those misconceptions need to be, you know, eliminated.
Yeah, and absolutely. And if you think it's easy, I mean, just try doing a reading for yourself and scoring it, you know. So if the average is getting, you know, if you can guess 25% of the time, and that's pretty much consistent, you know, how do you explain when certain people can do 90% and 80%, you know, and you've experienced.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
We've been talking with Bill Caspary. The book is The Galilean Pendulum, A New Science Reveals an Unseen World. The website is understandingafterlife.com. The book, there is a link on our website, an Amazon link to the book. Bill goes into quite a number of things, near-death experiences, other paranormal phenomena, his personal accounts, his participation in the study of mediumship, and a look at a scientific look at these phenomena, and discusses skeptics and science. It's a very enjoyable book to read. I recommend it. And Bill, I appreciate you being with us tonight. Best of luck with the book. I hope people will visit that site, understandingafterlife.com, and we'll I hope you'll come back and visit us soon.
It would be my pleasure, Bob. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind as we visualize the healing light upon Lynn Cheney, Rachel S., Lenny Ficarelli, Joel Auerbach, Janice Ferrelli, Jeanette Davies, Dorothy Mello, Andy O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Miriam Pierzga, Laura Prisco, John Borland, Stanley Mullen, Julie B., Glenna Irwin, Barbara Patillo, David Haith, Rita Springer, Eileen LaFada, Mark Varon, Wendy Lippo, Vicky Steffi, Barbara Russell, Tina Jocelyn, Deb Martin, Tim Donahue, and Francis Mastracco. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
Let's get everybody on that list well so we can shorten that list, okay?
Okay. Think about that.
Our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.